It's the Wintrust Business Lunch Hour. Good to be with you. I'm Bob Surratt.
I'm Marianne Murciano. It's Friday. It's freezing.
And it's John Carpenter from the Tribune's startup venture column, Blue Sky Innovation. Bill and Wendy were talking about the Academy Awards with Dean. And you've got an interesting story about the movies, John.
Yeah, we have. We found a group of Northwestern professors who they're scientists, but they were looking for a way to objectively evaluate creative things. So they decided to use movies as kind of a sample, and they used the website IMDb, which, if you're not familiar with it,
is this,
it's awesome, massive compilation of data about movies. And what they found was the best way to predict whether a movie is going to sort of stand the test of time and become like an iconic movie is to take a look at how many times that movie is referenced in other movies. So, like, if you see the famous shower scene from Psycho, and then, you know, you look at a current movie where a director maybe builds tension kind of the same way, that's obviously kind of a directorial nod to Psycho. And IMDb collects that stuff. And so these guys sort of counted that up, and then they compiled a list, and then they compared it to the National Film Registry, which is sort of like a Hall of Fame. And they found that, as opposed to sort of box office, ticket sales, critics, that those sort of references were kind of the most reliable way to predict which movies are going to wind up in that National Film Registry.
So you're not saying, so you're saying that they have to have like spoken, or could it just be that a director, you know, imitated a scene?
It's a wide variety of things. It could be like a real obvious one, the shower scene would be kind of an obvious one. But some of these references are as obscure as like a snippet of music. You know, in the background, you might hear the theme from The Wizard of Oz.
But what's the reasoning for that? Why would that be something that
sticks?
You know,
I think they sort of speculated that it was sort of allowing the artists to judge it. In other words, if you're a director and you love The Wizard of Oz or Psycho and you think it's so good that you decide to sort of either imitate it or put a little tip of the hat to it. I mean, sometimes you'll see movies where an old movie will be on TV in the background, or you know, sometimes it'll be a line of dialogue that's obviously straight out of an old movie.
Yeah, usually a favorite of the director.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they speculated, that if it's the directors who judge this is something really important, that's what it is. But at the end of the day, they weren't really trying to figure out why. They just collected these lists of citations and compared that to the National Film Registry, and it was almost dead on.
So on their list of the most referenced movies, what's the top three?
Top three are Wizard of Oz.
That's number one. Huh?
Number one by far.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars and Psycho.
I'm glad up at Northwestern, they are deep into the academic world of motion pictures.
Yeah.
Apparently they have a little extra time in the professor's lounge. Let's talk a little bit about TV tonight. Shark Tank has a Chicago connection.
Yep, we've got a Chicago startup on Shark Tank. You know, I'm sure everybody knows Shark Tank. It's a popular show where businesses come in and pitch. And Luminade is a Chicago startup that started kind of in the wake of the earthquake in Haiti, and these two young women were looking to solve the problem of lighting. Obviously, power went out and it gets dark. And so what they came up with is a inflatable solar-powered light. And the inflatability is key because you can ship it flat. You can ship lots of them. It's about the size of a pillow when you unfold it. You blow it up. You can easily blow it up with your mouth. And then it has a small light, and you know, sort of the luminescence of the pillow or the inflatable opaque thing creates kind of a floating light bulb, and it's really pretty and it's very useful. And you put it out. I think that said 7 hours of sunlight will give you anywhere from like 11 to 15 or 16 hours of lighting. So it's a handy thing. And I think they're kind of starting to expand. I think you can actually buy it an L.L. Bean. You can. It started out as totally a relief thing, and it's sort of moving beyond that. And
it started as a project at an incubator here.
Yeah. The incubator is called Social Impact, which is it's based out of 1871. But what they focus on are companies that are for-profit companies. They're not charities. They're for-profit companies that are aimed at solving a social problem.
Talk a little bit about Priceline. What did they buy? I'm not sure. I know what Rocket Miles.
Rocket Miles is a pretty interesting site. Rocket Miles is a Chicago startup, and what Rocket Miles does is allow you to book hotels. It's a hotel booking site, basically, but you you get frequent flyer miles for your bookings. I think they said they have deals with 25 or 26 airlines, and Priceline is buying them for a reported price of about $20 million. And according to the industry experts, really what Priceline is buying is a loyalty program. Expedia has loyalty, you know, the other travel booking agencies have loyalty programs, and that's what people are kind of drawn to. And this is kind of a quick way, apparently, for Priceline to get into that end of the business.
So so Rocket Miles are, the points would be accrued on Rocket Miles?
They would be accrued through Rocket Miles to you. I think when you sign up for Rocket Miles, you tell them what your what airline you want to apply it to, and you book a hotel. They buy up sort of blocks of hotel rooms from hotel, as hotels are trying to book rooms. And so when you sign up for Rocket Miles, you can say, I want my American Airlines miles or United miles or Delta or whatever. And as you book your hotels, you get your miles.
And Rocket Miles is a Chicago startup.
Yep.
Good for them.
Yeah.
And John Carpenter covers those startup ventures and business innovation for the Tribune's Blue Sky. Thanks as always, John. Let's step into business class now. The proprietor of the very comprehensive travel website, the only one you need, JohnnyJet.com, our world traveler, Johnny Jet, joins us every Friday. And Johnny, we understand you're in Miami, and you're freezing too, aren't you?
Yeah, we don't want to hear that you're freezing in Miami. I'm sorry. I've been hearing it all day.
But it's cold there.
Yeah.
I'm wearing my ski jacket. You know, it's probably 50-something. Last night it went down to 40, which is freezing for Miami.
Yeah, well, when it gets down below 65, they wear those heavy jackets there. Johnny Jet is sponsored by Ultimate Air Shuttle. And let's see, where do we begin here, Johnny? Can you clear something up finally, once and for all? I read yet another article about the cheapest days to fly. And is there a hard and fast rule that one day of the week is better than another or not?
Which article did you read? Did it say where, you know, you don't want to buy over the weekend? I just read that today.
Yeah, it was another, and I've read different things about this. Some say, well, no, disregard that, it doesn't matter. This was an article in the New York Times that cited Hopper.com. They analyzed flights, and they had their suggestions for the best times to book and to fly. And they basically said, yes, cheaper during the week. But that's not always true, is it?
It's not always true. But, you know, so I always recommend setting fare alerts, which we talked about, and I have them on my website. So you can there's a bunch of companies that do it, Airfare Watchdog, Yapta, Kayak. You go in and you put in your city pairs, the dates you want to fly, and the price you want to pay. And then they will email you when it drops below that. But you also want to shop. You also want to sign up to every kind of deals newsletter, for all the airlines. Also, Airfare Watchdog has a good one. The flight deal. I have a pretty good one. And so whenever these deals come out, you just jump on them. But again, I shop around every day for fares. And I notice I buy them on weekends too. Sometimes on weekends they drop. So I don't really believe it. I mean, just a week and 2 weeks ago, American had that deal. I think I talked about $1. From LA, a dollar fare from LA or New York to Copenhagen via London, plus taxes. But that was over the weekend that came out.
You're right.
And then you had to buy it immediately, right?
Well, actually, that one you did not. That one actually just ended 2 days ago. It was there for over 10 days. I couldn't believe it. Every day, what's nice about American Airlines' website is you can put stuff on hold. So what I do every day when I find fares and I'm not completely sure, but I don't want to lose it, I'll put it on hold. And then I check the next day. If it's still there, I'll go in and cancel my other reservation and then one and put it on hold for another 24 hours. And I did that for 10 days for that European fare. And then when they didn't offer it anymore, it turned to $3,000 that one way. I bought it.
Okay, talk a little bit about that, because this is something that I find so aggravating. I have American Airlines frequent flyer miles, and that is the only place I've found where you can put something on hold. What gives? Are they going to be getting rid of that as well?
Well, I hope not. American is my favorite right now because, you know, they have the best freaking flyer program. And by the way, a good tip for American Airlines, you can get the U.S. Airways credit card for $89 and make one purchase, and you can get 50,000 miles. It's the best deal in travel, and that's going to be going away shortly. There's more information on that on my homepage. But what I do with my American Miles, the best way to use your American Miles is last-minute travel. Because, for example, I'm flying my dad from New York to L.A. tomorrow, business class, for 25,000 miles. That ticket is normally $3,000. But if I wanted to buy that, if I wanted to just buy a coach ticket, it would have been $600, and I could have used 12,000 miles for that. So that's the way to do it. You don't want to use your miles for, you know, a $150 ticket. You want to use them for something expensive, or 50,000 miles will get you to Europe.
Mm-hmm. Johnny, do you ever use this? Are you familiar with Google Flight Search? I've never done this, but I guess you go on Google Flight Search and you can see which days your desired flight is cheaper and so forth. Do you like that one?
For sure. You know, so I've been using ITA software, and it's Google Bottom, so it's the same software. And what's nice about it is you put in your city pairs and the month you want to search, and it will give you the cheapest day to fly. Then you click it, and it will show you which airline. You can't buy on that. You have to then go directly to that airline and buy it. But it's definitely one of the best. It's not always, but it is definitely my favorite.
I like one of your travel tips on your site, on johnnyjet.com, and it's simple, but a lot of people don't do this. Tell the story about the good table you got at the restaurant in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, this is just it's very simple. I was at Duke's, which is one of the most touristy spots in Waikiki, but locals go there, too, for special occasions. It's right on the beach. It's beautiful. My wife and I were there last month, and the hostess was walking us to the table, and it was in the middle of the restaurant. And I noticed there was an open one right on the rail. And I said, by the way, is there a way we can just move to that? And she said, no problem. So you just got to ask.
Right.
If I didn't ask, it would have been in the middle of the restaurant.
And exactly.
Now, because of that, we had a view of Diamond Head.
Yeah, there was a nice table with a view of Diamond Head available, but you had to ask. I know.
That's all you got to do. Sometimes you just got to ask.
Finally.
Somebody used to tell me that about girls. You want to go on a date, just ask them out.
Right. You may get turned down, but for sure, if you don't ask, you're not going to be successful.
That's right. And I got turned down more times than not.
Hey, join the club. Frontier Airlines announced that they're expanding in Chicago here in April. They're adding four new flights from O'Hare. Do you fly Frontier a lot in your world travels, Johnny?
I've actually never been on Frontier. I wanted to go on Frontier, but now, you know, they brought in like the CEO from Spirit Airlines, and so now they're, you know, doing Spirit's practices, which is charging for carry-on bags. They charge for everything. So I have not flown them. So it's good for airfares, though, because it will lower them, but remember, when you fly Frontier, you're going to get charged for everything.
Hey, Johnny, you know, I'm going to read this text to you because it's not the first time I've seen it. So I keep seeing the same kind of stuff. Southwest Air, somebody says, has the best points program. I fly for $5.60 and points. My companion flies for no miles and $5.60. No cancel fees, no rebook fees.
Yeah.
What is that all about?
Where did you read that? That's
this is a text.
Pair.
Yeah, a text that just came in. But every time you're on, we get similar texts about this.
I see. So this is Southwest Companion Pass. Usually, you have to fly 110,000 miles or 110,000 points in a year, and then you can get a companion pass. But actually, if those are based in Atlanta, or you can tell your friends in Atlanta that right now they're offering a deal. If you just fly three times on Southwest, because they're trying to compete with Delta, that they will give you the companion pass, which is amazing. All you do is pay. Your companion can be on the same exact flight as you, and all they do is pay tax.
Not bad.
And another trick, by the way, for those who aren't from Atlanta, obviously, which is most people there, they do have a credit card. Southwest has a credit card where sometimes they offer 50,000 miles points, 50,000 points, which goes towards the companion status. And if you do that and get a business card, that's 100,000 points. Hmm. And then all you need to do is fly 10,000 points and you get the companion pass. So there's ways around it. But if you fly Southwest, it's the best deal out there.
Nobody knows.
I don't fly Southwest much.
Yeah, well, nobody knows more about travel than you, Johnny. All things travel on the site, johnnyjet.com. Stay warm there in frigid Miami, Johnny.
Don't worry.
Thanks, Johnny.
Talk to you next Friday. You too.
More on the Wintrust Business Lunch coming up on 720 WGN.
Let's get some hashtags, likes, and shares. Tribune social media editor Scott Kleinberg joins us with that. So Facebook's decision to buy Instagram is looking good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really smart idea. You know, everybody comes out and says, you know, you can't spend $1 billion on something, and then you find out why you do that. So they're projected to make $700 million in revenue this year, Instagram is, and analysts are saying $5.8 billion in revenue by 2020. Mm. And that is obviously a huge increase. And they say it's because more users, more advertisers, as there were more users. And they're actually calling for the amount of users to double to 680 million by 2020.
Okay, by 2020, this is my prediction. Mm-hmm. Instagram will be passé. Like Facebook is now.
Wow.
Because
and what will be the new thing then?
Well, then something Snapchat we don't know will about be, yet. You know, like the new, you know, the Instagram of today, and then there'll be something else.
That is certainly possible. The only reason that I see that that might not happen in this case is only because
I'm not being serious, Scott. I know nothing.
But only because Instagram is so popular with kids right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, where it might just end up staying that way, where they may, you know.
Until we start using it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yes.
When all
yes.
the old people start using it, it will not be cool anymore.
So, and Google is trying to capitalize on kids and their penchant for YouTube, aren't they?
Yep. They're launching a new app, and it is only for Android right now, which I'm sure that'll change eventually, but it launches, I believe, on Monday, and it is just for kids. And parents basically went to them and said, you know, we need a way for kids to be able to look for videos on YouTube without finding other things that are less than wholesome.
Good idea.
And they created an entire app and an entire
so
process.
It screens the, how does that work? Does it screen the videos?
It screens the videos. It's curated with like certain ones that are popular. So like when it pops up on the app, it shows like 8 squares and it has like all these squares of like, you know, these cute things that, you know, kids are into and whatever's popular at the time. Almost reminds me of kind of like what the App Store looks like with the squares that pop up. And if a kid for some reason types in a word that wouldn't be wholesome in the search, a thing pops up over the top and says try to find something else. So it's very intuitive to make sure that they don't do something that they're not supposed to do.
If only the kids would use it. It's called YouTube Kids. It's a free app and yes. It's available next week.
It's available Monday and it's only on Android to start, so it's going to be limited for a while, but I'm sure that once it makes its way through Android and people really enjoy it, that it'll end up everywhere.
Is YouTube one of those apps that comes with your phone?
YouTube,
because I know
does,
it's always on my phone, but I don't know if I actually put it there.
I put it there. I don't believe YouTube comes with your phone. Now, if you use it for Android, my guess is that it does because it's all part of that ecosystem.
Oh,
but
see.
As far as the iPhone goes, no, you actually do have to download it.
The Apple Car has been talked about a lot lately. We were kicking it around the other day, and not everybody thinks this is a good idea,
no,
do they?
No, a former GM CEO is saying that Apple absolutely does not want to get into this space, and I think his quote was, I'm paraphrasing, but his quote was something like they have no idea what they're in for. And, you know, this is one of those things where I read another story this morning saying the reason why Apple probably wants to do this is because they have so much cash on hand that they just can, which that must be a really great problem to have. But yeah, this guy is saying that no, that is definitely something you don't want to do.
Is the weather, the snow, the cold, especially in the Northeast, still creating a lot of buzz on social media?
It is creating a lot of buzz, and there's this great story out of Portland, Maine, where they're taking all of these snow piles from all these streets. Apparently, Portland has very narrow streets, so they're taking all these snow piles, they're putting them in this place by the airport, and the snow piles are so high, they had to start another one. They have one main one. They had to start another one because this one was affecting planes and landing instruments. So it was actually coming up as like a structure, a building, and it's like 54 feet high is like their limit or something like that. It didn't say how high the pile was, but if it's 54 feet high, chances are the snow pile is getting to be that high.
I think it was the mayor of Boston who was saying the other day about these people jumping out of their window onto snow banks, that this is nonsense and it's time to stop this.
It was Boston jumping out of second story windows. And you know, when you heard that story, you thought that maybe these snow piles were really close to the second story and they were just jumping a little bit. They're jumping all the way down from the second story into these things, and people are watching these videos like crazy.
I still think that sounds like fun. I'm sorry.
You do it.
I really do think that sounds like fun.
From time to time, I've noticed, Scott, that in the Trib, your So Social column, you'll give advice for people how to, for example, tweet so that you get more followers, and some do's and don'ts. And why don't you talk a little bit about these ideas for tweeting that that I know you've been thinking about and writing about?
For me, you know, I think it just depends on what kind of tweets you want to send. You have to be very, very careful not to send the same kind of tweet all the time. So I have this rule called broadcasting versus engaging. And I see a lot of people that are just interested in sharing things they think are interesting, and then they never have a conversation about those things. So we go between broadcasting and engaging and trying to have this back and forth conversation. To me, whenever I talk about tweeting, I compare it. And even long before I did this, I compare it to what you guys do on the radio. I say that if you sit there all the time and all you do is talk about the things you're interested in and never include anybody else, that you guys would get boring really fast, and you don't do that. And that's exactly the same thing you carry over onto Twitter.
Well, you hope that what you're interested in, someone else might be interested in.
Wait, so you're saying express your opinion, have a conversation, and then switch off to share something that you find interesting?
Yes, absolutely.
And then go back? You can't, do you have to do both? Do you have to have that conversation?
I really think the conversation helps. I don't think you have to. See, it's a little different for me because of the job that I do, but I think that if people are always tweeting and you're responding back and trying to hold a conversation and you go on to the next thing without responding to that, I think people lose interest in you and they unfollow you.
I don't want anybody to unfollow me at Mary Moore, and I will try to have conversations because I never have conversations. I just post, like, I'll post a picture of you on my Twitter account.
I've seen that, yes.
That you you came and you talked about, you know, such and such.
Right.
And so you're saying do more than that?
I think that that is okay. I think if somebody starts to talk back and say something to the effect of, we love the guest you have on your show, that's a thing where you don't want to not respond, or you don't want to have the opportunity to have that conversation with somebody.
I noticed that notifications used to give you a notification. Like it used to light up, or there was a check mark or something on it. And now there isn't. So I forget to go to notifications to see if somebody has gotten a hold of me on at Mary Moore.
I think the reason why that's happened, though, with notifications is because people used to complain so much about notifications being the default that I think they changed it the other way around. So now they want you to go in and actually say you want notifications. But the problem with doing that is exactly what you're saying. People don't realize that it got turned off because they don't tell you that, and then they don't see notifications and they don't respond. But there are a lot of people out there that just don't respond any. Anyway, and that's what I'm always trying to tell people, that that's never a good idea.
Okay, and what was the study that the National Science Foundation backed that they did at Cornell about tweets and Twitter and tweeting?
This is a great thing. This is somebody that created this little text-based thing that you pops up on your screen, and you type in two different tweets based on how you would want to send it, and it gives you a green text and a red text, and it tells you which one it thinks will do better based on an algorithm that they wrote. And then you are supposed to say, do you agree or disagree, to try to help them feed the algorithm to make it, you know, make it work. So I've been testing this all week, and I took like a tweet that I would send out, and I took another one that I thought, okay, this really wouldn't be good. And most of the time, it turns out, I guess I'm doing my job right, it's working out that it's popping up green.
So how do you do it?
It's, well, there's a website, and I have to find it. I don't have it here, but it pops up, and it's just two boxes, and you paste them in, and then you change the words around. And it has little great tips. Like, for example, if you add the words, please retweet, to a tweet that you really want people to share, that actually helps people engage. And I tried that the other day. It actually worked. That the story about the missing dogs in the van. I started of the tweets with please retweet, and then I put the news.
Did you write retweet or RT?
I actually did it both ways. I typed it once with RT to see what happened, once with retweet as a word, and retweet spelled out as a word worked better.
It's like what Johnny Jett was saying about getting a good table at a restaurant. You have to ask. You have to ask. Please retweet.
Makes sense. Yes.
I love that. These are great tips, Scott.
Well,
I love
that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So Social is the Column of the Trip. Scott Kleinberg, talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend.
We're hearing a lot about computer code these days and teaching kids code to boost math SAT scores. Here to talk a little bit about that, someone who can explain this to the parents, from a suburban business, Digital Adventures, the CEO and co-founder, Amawali Cassell. I hope I did that right.
That's perfect.
Welcome to WGN. Where do we start on this subject of computer code?
You're really impressive because you're involved in so many different things. But today, we're going to bring you back, by the way. But today, we want to talk about this coding that you are really, you have a big effort to teach coding to children at a very young age. Why? And what is it? Explain it.
So, I mean, essentially coding is teaching people how to make computers do what you want them to do at the highest level. And the reason why we came up with Digital Adventures is because I looked at my own kids. I have a second grader and a first grader, and I saw them running around with the iPads and the iPhones. I see them, you know, consuming content, and I thought, they need to know how to create the content. They need to know that the people who are actually creating the iPads, creating the video games, creating all these things are the ones that are going to have jobs in the future, right? So if you look at the different statistics, code.org does great work at, you know, researching the market. By the year 2020, there's going to be a million more jobs than there are people to fill them, right? So there's a pipeline right now that we're not solving for. It's going to be even worse as my kids start to come of age. So that's why we're going after this.
And then the other thing that I find is we have a 14-year-old, mm-hmm. and how do you get a 14-year-old who is a girl mm-hmm. to be interested in this? Because, you know, I have asked her, take computer classes at school. And she says, no, the people who take them, you know, like, they're none of my friends. And, you know, it's only a couple of, like, just computer geeks and all that. And sure, and sure. So how do you get that message across to 14-year-old girls?
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things that we've done and that I've noticed in my own children is that my son is much more interested in, you know, kind of the video game programming, the 3D printing, the Lego robotics. And my daughter is more interested in look and feel. Within technology, both of those are very important. So if you have someone that is able to program a nice user interface, that's just as valuable as someone who does the back-end database programming, right? So what we found is that the young ladies tend to be more interested in, you know, making the aesthetic. So we actually have a course designed for that, digital design, that takes people through how do you do animation, how do you do iMovies, how do you do Photoshop. And that's something that we really hope will appeal to the young ladies. But it's also getting, as more people get educated about what coding is, I think that you're going to see girls that are just as interested. Because if you look at, you know, broader industry trends, you see Sheryl Sandberg, you see Marissa Mayer at Yahoo, there's a lot of women that are establishing leadership within technology companies, which is something that we haven't seen before. And so as they start to get more role models, I think that that's going to get them more excited about coding for kids.
Right. And that's key, the role models, because mm-hmm. the role models right now are not people that teenagers really normally know. Mm-hmm. So what do you tell the teenager that this might be your possible job if you learn this? What
I think it's less about communicating the job aspect. One of the things that we actually focus on is making it fun for the people that come through our program. And so instead of it having, you know, instead of someone learning on a command prompt that's just basically syntax and, you know, different statements, what we try to do is say, you're going to have fun with this. So we go through, and our lessons are not necessarily focused on, you know, variables or, you know, loop statements or things that are more broadly associated with computer programming. They're more so focused on how do you have fun? How do you learn through play? And so that's something that we've really tried to get people focused on to get more excited about this.
It's like the president said in a promotional video not too long ago, don't just play on your phone, program it.
Exactly.
And mom and dad can't help. You can help, though. And I know people are going to want to find out more about this. How do they get in touch with Digital Adventures?
So there's a couple ways that you can get in touch with us. So you can visit our location. We're on the North Shore of Chicago in the village of Wilmette, 406 Linden Avenue. You can stop by our space. You can look for us online, www.digitaleducationadventures.com.
So can they get educated online as well?
Is
there an online program?
We're not doing online. And the reason for that is that we feel like that's not a natural way for kids to be learning, right? So normally kids are going through a classroom experience where they actually have a teacher that's alongside them so that if they have a question or they get confused, there's someone that's right along with them. In addition to that, we want to make sure that there's peers that are in there. So when you talk about your daughter might not think it's as cool, if she's sitting at home alone just on the computer by herself,
yes.
That's not as fun. Where we bring
exactly.
in the peers, it's more social, it's more fun, it's more interactive, and that's really what we're focused on.
I'm Awali Cassell, co-founder and CEO of Digital Adventures. Come back and talk to us more
absolutely.
About this.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
Awali. Thanks for having me.
More on the Wintrust Business Lunch coming up on 720 WGN.